You're a fool, Andreas. An utter fool. Your fate is to be what you are, just as my fate is to be what I am, your master. Hi there.
Hello. Is that perky enough?
That was pretty perky. Okay, that was good. That's you. That was downright ecstatic.
I blew my load, so to speak.
Well, go clean yourself off. Yes, well, I'm the finely defrosted Ken Hanke.
It's like critic. Encino Man, is that what you're
yes,
saying?
Yes, very much like Encino Man at this point, yes.
Does that make
of Frank Moran in Return of the Ape
okay.
Man. Which is a caveman in long underwear and some cellophane
ice. Because I didn't
want to
be... I was wondering who would be Pauly Shore. So it would be myself or Steve. I guess he would be Sean Astin, probably. And I would be Pauly Shore.
Well, and this is not working out pleasantly on any level. So let's just move right along and point out the fact that I'm the movie critic, or one of the movie critics for the Mountain Express.
And I'm the other one.
You're the other one. And you are...
Justin Sowler.
Yes, the characteristically perky Justin Sowler.
Yes. Second Cheerwine.
Yeah, it could be.
Not
yes.
brought to you by Cheerwine, because, I mean, if they want to
cough up some money, I mean, you know.
We'll mention Cheerwine.
We'll mention Cheerwine constantly. I drink Cheerwine constantly.
Yeah.
Break loose with this cash, boys. Now,
Cheerwine have a tagline?
It's good taste.
Is that it?
Yep.
That's okay. We can come up with a better one.
I know.
For free. Anyway.
Well, no, not for free. They've got to...
Well, I mean, we'll come up with one, and then they can...
You know, if we're going to do product placement on here, they've got to...
Pony up?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
Anyway.
Where are we?
We're
just outside the cinema lounge.
Yes.
By the bar.
Because
Ken's had a rough day.
Drinking cheer wine.
Yeah.
And this is at the Carolina,
yes,
Asheville,
mm-hmm.
which is located on
Hendersonville Road.
That's right.
In Skyland or Asheville, somewhere.
It's in
South
North
Asheville.
America.
Yeah. And we have been to the movies.
And we are and will remain elitist bastards.
It's true.
And so, what did you see, little Johnny?
I saw the newest opus.
That should be able to be worked into one word, like an opusy or an opus.
Opus.
No, that
copious,
makes it sound like an
opus.
Opiate, you know. So. Anyway, I
had much the same reaction.
Oh, okay.
As I would to opiates, because it's basically almost 2 hours of Vince Vaughn. As shot by Ron Howard.
You know, you really don't have to say any more to me than 2 hours of Vince Vaughn, but go ahead.
Right. It's a lot of Vince Vaughn.
That is a lot of Vince Vaughn.
Yeah. It's Vince Vaughn just trying to claw his way into some sort of relevance. I don't know what it was. He looks bloated and tired and sort of how the movie is.
Okay.
It's...
Yeah, I believe this. The however, just based on the fact that it stars Vince Vaughn and
Kevin James.
Yes, I believe I can. I'm going to have to recant the statement that I once made that Ron Howard makes movies my mother would like. I think he has failed in this regard this time.
You should let her watch it. And she might think it's uproariously hilarious.
Probably not.
Okay.
All right, so you've got Vince Vaughn.
Uh-huh. Kevin James. Who,
in some
just because he's not Vince Vaughn, is not.
Yes, but in some alternate world, uh-huh. he has managed to marry Winona Ryder.
Yes, and mm-hmm. in some alternate world where...
Where Jennifer Connelly takes up with Vince Vaughn.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm buying this.
Well, especially Vince Vaughn.
I buy it if they were taking up with the real people because they've got money and celebrity.
Right.
But if these were guys on the street, they would not look twice.
Well,
they might look twice the second time to confirm their suspicions, but they would not go out with them, much less marry them or date them.
We also get a Channing Tatum sighting.
I'm sure that matters to some.
Well, he's somehow the best thing in the movie. It's not even close. Which should give you an idea of the quality of this.
Yeah, I'm going to have to chew on that for a while.
You can chew on Channing all you want to.
No.
And
I have my standards.
The whole movie
They may be low, but I have them.
So you say, one day we'll see for sure. Nevertheless.
Put that street boy down.
What we have is a movie that's about Vince Vaughn and his best friend Kevin James, and Mr. Vaughn catches Kevin James' wife cheating on him.
Oh.
And so we spend the next, what feels like two, it's not quite 2 hours.
If you're married to Kevin James, you cheat on him too.
Well, that's what they, it's a very complicated relationship, as we find out.
Oh, okay.
Ad nauseum.
Oh, wow. It's complicated. It sounds like a Nancy Myers picture.
The dilemma's not a much better title.
No.
It's more like a pain in the ass.
So we have this situation in which something's got to give.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
So,
I can't remember either Nancy Myers.
Holiday.
So it's not a holiday.
Yeah, okay. So it was not a holiday.
The best I can do.
All right. Well, in any case, so the whole dilemma then is to tell her or not to tell her.
Tell him.
Him, rather. Okay.
Yes. And
I have trouble with genders when I look at Kevin James for some reason.
Anyway, it's long and loud and never gets quite the right footing on whether it wants to be just a flat comedy or if it wants to be dramatic. And so you really get neither.
It's mostly but just look. Once again, Ron has provided work for Clint, thereby keeping him off public assistance and saving the rest of us money.
So we assume.
Well, yeah, that's true. I guess he pays him for these things.
Maybe.
Well, he has dialogue. He has to pay him.
Okay.
He had dialogue in the trailer, so I know he has dialogue.
Okay. Forget if Rance speaks. I think he does.
Yeah, but Rance isn't like a public embarrassment. Clint is.
I still like Clint better than either.
Well, I can't help that. That's, you know, just because he was in Gentle Ben, you've got a thing for him. I don't know.
Well, he didn't make
neither.
Any Ron Howard movie, I guess. So he's got that.
No, but he's in most of them.
Yeah, well, it's not his fault. He's got nothing better to do. Yeah. And what did you watch, Ken?
Oh, land of dearie me. What did I watch? Oh, I watched Michel Gondry's The Green Hornet, which you also watched.
Yes, I did.
Especially because you wanted to, and also because
there was a good chance you were going
to
be frozen.
Up in the air as to whether or not I was going to be able to chip my way out of the frozen tundra and make it into town, which I finally did on Sunday, which was cutting it mighty fine. And what did you think of?
I liked it. I found it surprisingly fun. I think both of us had the same problem in that we don't like Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
He is really the biggest drawback.
Yeah.
In the
film. Funny thing about Seth Rogen is he was more appealing when he was fat. Now that he's skinnied up, he's not appealing at all. He wasn't that appealing when he was fat.
Maybe he's just annoying you more.
Maybe he is.
You've just gotten more of it.
I don't know, but the whole thing about it is it surprised me was for a $100+ million action picture, there is really a lot of Michel Gondry in this movie.
Right.
I'm amazed they let him do even half of what he did. The vibe on this thing is very Be Kind Rewind.
Right. Well, there's this weird tension between that and the Seth Rogen script that feels like it wants to be Pineapple Express with the violence is over the top.
Yeah, but somehow or other, Rogan must have something to do with that script.
Yeah, he co-wrote it.
I know, but right. I mean, that which means that script has got something to do with some of the undercurrents in the film.
Right.
So, Rogan must get some credit somewhere.
Right.
If only for listening to Michel Gondry.
Or hiring him.
Or hiring him. And I do like the Christoph Waltz character. I like a bad guy whose big concern is how scary he is. I think that's a really sort of a neat touch. And the action scenes are fine. The problem is that they feel in many cases like they're there because there have to be action scenes because this is, after all, the Green Hornet, which nobody really has a very good handle on who or what the Green Hornet is, because it was a one-season television show that pretty much flopped and now has a sort of cult following because Bruce Lee played Kato. And, you know, as I said in my review, quick, name me who played the Green Hornet without looking it up. Exactly. Which I think this film is very smart that it makes fun of that the Green Hornet is pretty much a worthless character and that Kato is really he is the...
He does all the work.
He does all the work. He even came up with the name Green Hornet in this. But neither one of them can get to first base with Cameron Diaz, so...
It's a pity, I guess.
I guess, you know. Which, in itself, though, I kind of like that aspect of it, too.
Right.
It didn't end up with some romantic involvement in between Britt Reed and anybody, except possibly Kato.
Right.
And that tension is throughout the entire film, as to...
But that was in Pineapple Express as well.
Mostly involving James Franco,
right. Yes. So...
Yeah, so I could, you know... But that tension is actually brought very much to the forefront in Be Kind, Rewind. Especially when Melanie Diaz accuses him of being in love with Jack Black, so...
So it's a weird mix of the two movies. I think Gondry wins out more than he doesn't.
Yes.
There's that one really... I could spend, like... tons of time just rewatching that split screen scene.
Yeah,
where they keep dividing up.
Well, yeah, you'd
the
have
action.
To figure out how far that can go before it becomes incomprehensible. Of course, it did become incomprehensible.
Right. But how they accomplished it, I guess, is another thing.
I think the most images I've ever seen on a screen before is 5.
This one has to have it.
Oh, it's got
15,
many more
20.
Than that. I mean, the one that's 5 has a central image. It's the general died at dawn. It has a central image, and it scrolls back on the corners.
Okay.
And four different, to show you four other things that are going on. Which is really cool, because it scrolls back. It's not just... It's made in the 30s, you know.
Right.
They were big on optical wipes and things like that. Which, unfortunately... I think the last person that used optical wipes was Kurosawa. And I think he's kind of retired now.
Well, you do hate all Asian movies.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out where that came from.
All of them.
Yeah.
It's because of the war.
Except for the ones that are off the hook good, of course.
Yeah. Can we change the name of the podcast?
To Off the Hook Good? No.
Off the Hook Good Movies.
We liked it. We'll probably watch it again.
Are you up to that point now? Have you
I like it more than I don't. I don't know if I'll watch it again in a theater, partly because I don't want to wear the glasses.
Right.
And the 3D in this is absolutely pointless.
Right.
I don't think there wasn't even a particularly good retrofit. There was nothing that benefited from being in 3D. So, but I will probably buy it, so.
Good enough.
Which that actually contributes more to Michel Gondry than my watching it, because if I go to watch it, I won't pay for a ticket.
Right.
So, but if I
but
buy it,
but you might convince people to pay for a ticket.
But I might convince people to pay for a ticket. So go see The Green Hornet and support Michel Gondry.
So he can make other stuff that we like more.
That we like better, yes. So, I believe Steve is champing at the bit to move on to the Thursday Horror Picture Show.
Unfortunately, it's only Tuesday, so We'll have to wait a couple more days.
Yeah, I know. He's going to get awfully tired of standing here.
But until then, we can talk about it.
That's true. We could talk about it. And we have a double feature this week.
Do we?
Yes. Yeah. Amazing.
Well, what are they?
They are The Devil Commands with Boris Karloff and Return of the Vampire with Bela Lugosi.
Okay.
They're both from Colombia in the 1940s. And I believe you have seen at least part of The Devil Commands.
I don't believe so, but
I think we ran it at the Carmike.
I don't remember, but possibly.
Well, I'm not sure you stayed awake.
Okay.
Which is
I don't feel like I've seen this. I feel like I would. You talk. I'm going to look at the back of the box.
Okay. They're, well, The Devil Commands is actually pretty much excellent in terms of high-end B-picture 1940s horror. In fact, it still maintains its level of creepiness. And Return of the Vampire, it's got Bela Lugosi.
And a werewolf?
And a werewolf. Unfortunately, when werewolves talk with a mouthful of werewolf teeth, they sound like they're doing Amos and Andy. And this is a real chatty werewolf. It's basically a very straightforward vampire picture. But the interesting thing about that is to realize how very few straightforward vampire pictures were made in that era. You've got Dracula, you've got Dracula's daughter, you've got Son of Dracula, which is actually has a serious variation on the myth. You've got The Vampire's Ghost, which was made the next year, which is a really lower rung B picture, which has yet another incredible variation, which has something to do about being cursed by Queen Elizabeth or something. Or wandering into the valleys of the Zion. Anyway, it's set in Africa. It's very silly. There really aren't that many straightforward vampire pictures from that era. And this is, the funny thing though is that this feels like the perfunctory vampire picture. And yet they managed to bring in a werewolf, which he does explain. The presence of the werewolf, he is seen carrying this parcel.
Uh-huh.
And when it's opened, it has Lugosi's clothes in it. So now you know how vampires keep that snappy dresser appearance going throughout the centuries. They have werewolf laundrymen. And it also manages to work in World War II and the Blitz, because with the first section of the film, which for some mysterious reason they keep trying not to show you Lugosi's face like you don't know who it is, takes place about 1917. And it ends up with that character getting staked. And that should take care of him. But along comes a bombing during World War II, and he's disinterred. And when he's disinterred, one of the people who disinters him figures it would be really a nice thing to do to pull that stake out of him. This was just basically a bad idea. So he comes back during wartime, and it's fine on a real high school horror level. It's a lot like a Hammer picture in that regard. It's like people dressing up and jumping out and saying boo. But it's not, it's never really creepy. But it is Lugosi in fine form. Unfortunately, except for the line at the beginning of the podcast that I managed to memorize specifically to please Mr. Schanefeld, the dialogue just isn't memorable. It's fine, but it's not memorable. Lugosi doesn't say anything really amazing. I mean, there's no, you know, like, there's nothing like the lines he has in Dracula, for example. I mean, so it's not, even a lot of his grade B or grade C, even, films from the same era have wonderfully quotable dialogue. Some of it, I think, is accidental. I mean, you know, just getting to hear Lugosi say, "Apple pie, my, that will be a treat," is, you know, it just has, it's that, that's got something going for it where you remember it. But, you know, it's fun. Where does this happen?
The Carolina Asheville in the Cinema Lounge.
And
at 8 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
On Thursdays.
Yeah, but what particular Thursday are we in reference to here?
This Thursday?
Yes, which would be the...
I don't know. What is
20th.
2 days from
it's
now.
It's the 20th. It's the 20th.
You tell me I needed a calendar.
I expect you to be up on these things. All right. So we've now dealt with that.
Yes.
Shall we deal with the Asheville Film Society?
No.
No. All right. We're not going to deal with those people.
Yeah. Now, this is a movie, when we were coming up with the schedule, the movie is First Love. You said you demanded that we run this movie.
Yes, I demanded that we run this movie because this is one of those little movies that just aren't brought back. And I think they should be brought back. I think that there is a value to seeing the more straightforward, just routine, but good pictures that were turned out, as opposed to all of the standard textbook classics and the great films. And, it, you know, this was a big picture in 1939 because Deanna Durbin was the biggest star Universal Pictures had, and she would continue to be the biggest star they had for several years. I guess Abbott and Costello may have finally eclipsed her. But, you know, this was her first adult role. She got her first screen kiss, and apparently somewhat more from Robert Stack, but that was off-screen. And it's done as a screwball comedy version of Cinderella. It steals wildly from My Man Godfrey, including one of the cast members. But it does it well, and it's very entertaining. It's a lot of fun. Deanna sings a very nice version of Amapola and a really good version of One Fine Day from Puccini's Madame Butterfly with English lyrics that actually fit. So, you know, I mean, it's just a... It's a nice, enjoyable 90-minute movie. And I will forgive it for introducing Robert Stack.
So many mysteries.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it's all. I don't know
some,
if he actually
I could tell some tittle-tattle about Robert Stack, except that it's all by deduction. So I can't really go into it on the record.
So maybe you've solved some mysteries. Is that what
yes, I think I've solved a mystery because nobody else fits the description. But we'll
can
just
you put the,
tantalize you with that.
Can you put the Unsolved Mysteries theme song in there right when you couldn't have been anyone else? Anyway, what's coming up next week, Ken?
What is coming up next week? Well,
we have...
you mean this week? Well, next
this week.
Is, yeah, yeah, this week. This week,
what movies are we going to watch this weekend?
Well, there is For Sure. We're going to stick with the For Sures.
Okay.
For Sure. There is No Strings Attached, the new romantic comedy starring Natalie Portman.
Do you think this is her Norbit?
Yes.
Okay.
Because that Natalie Portman is co-starring with Ashton Kutcher in a film directed by Ivan, I haven't had a hit in over 20 years, Reitman. I predict this is going to be grim. Even if...
Bold prediction, Ken.
Bold prediction, yes. Yes, I'm going out on a limb here and saying this is going to be bad.
Heard it here first.
Yes, well, probably not. It's apparently supposed to be R-rated and raunchy, and I think we can pretty much guarantee that that means it's going to be language, because I believe after her little bare-ass thing in Hotel Chevalier on the Darjeeling Limited, she said she wasn't going to do that again.
Well, maybe it's Ashton Kutcher bare-ass.
I don't particularly want to see Ashton
Maybe it's
Kutcher.
Rated R for Ashton Kutcher.
It may just be rated R for Ashton Kutcher. You know, I mean, it was originally going to be called Fuck Buddies. Now, did anybody really think that was going to make it onto a marquee?
No. Yes.
Yes, probably yes. They were obviously all operating in some alternate dimension. But in any case, in addition to that coming out, we have...
I forget. Oh, The Way Back. Things all run together.
Well, yeah, but The Way Back is... You know, one is a movie with Ashton Kutcher and Natalie Portman, and the other is a movie with Jim Sturgis and Colin Farrell escaping from a Soviet labor camp in the Siberian...
Can you blame them?
...wasteland. No. And making their way across 4,000 miles of inhospitable terrain to India and freedom, directed by Peter Weir. So, you know, it might be good. It certainly sounds better than...
The Other Thing.
The Other Thing, yes. The Other Thing I definitely don't even want to think about. But we have no choice.
I guess we're done.
Are we done?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Good.
I've had enough.
Who are you, lads?
Oh, I don't know. Who
I'm
are
Justin
we?
Souther, you're Ken Hankey.
That's right. That's right. That's
Brought
right.
to you by the Mountain Express.
Yes, the fine folks at the Mountain Express. And we are produced by the inimitable, and now also our editor, the illuminated Steve Schanefeld. Oh, God, we're in trouble now.